Hello, I'm Theo, and I was the Member of Parliament for Stafford and chaired the UK Birth Trauma Inquiry in Parliament. And I have a beautiful daughter, but like many women, my birth was far from straightforward. I suffered from a traumatic birth after a 40-hour labour, postpartum hemorrhage, emergency surgery for my birth injury, and went on to develop PTSD. And it was this experience that led me to start campaigning nationally on ending the postcode lottery in maternity care. So Breaking the Taboo is a new podcast on women's health. And in series one, I'll be looking at the issue of birth trauma by speaking to affected mums and their families, healthcare professionals and campaigners. So if you, like me, feel like you didn't know where to ask for help, or you felt too ashamed to ask, then I hope you know you're not alone and that this podcast is very much here for you. Please get in touch with us with your stories and your reflections on the show, as we'd love to hear from you. And thanks to our sponsor, the law firm Irwin Mitchell. You can follow me on Instagram at Theo Clark MP, or do get in touch with us via our show website, which you'll find in the notes below. And now on to today's show. Hello and welcome to today's episode of Breaking the Taboo. And today I'm delighted that we're going to discuss a really important subject. We're going to talk about going back to work after birth trauma. And a lot of mothers have written to me since our first episode dropped, and they heard Jill talking about her issues as a police officer. And so I thought we'd have a dedicated episode to talk specifically about this topic. So I'm delighted to have two guests today to talk about this issue. The first is Geeta Nair, who is a mum who was affected by birth trauma and has become an advocate for the Masic Foundation and a campaigner on maternity safety. And also Shah Qureshi, who is head of employment and professional discipline from the London team at the law firm Irwin Mitchell, who has a focus on discrimination work. So thank you both for joining me today on this episode. And Geeta, if I could start with you, if you could just briefly introduce yourselves to our listeners.
Thank you, Theo. I was working as an associate solicitor when in 2008, I had a very traumatic delivery with my daughter, Maya. We were both injured, actually. I sustained a 3C tear and postnatal PTSD and have been left with permanent injuries. It hugely affected my life and my family, my career. And now I advocate and campaign for maternity safety, including tackling disparities in maternity care.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us. And Shah, if you could just briefly introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you. My name's Shah Qureshi. I am the head of employment law at Irwin Mitchell's London office. I've been practicing in employment law with a particular specialism in equality and discrimination work for the last 25 years.
Fantastic. Well, it's lovely to have you both with us today. And Geeta, I wonder if we could start with you. You've been very brave to share your personal experience of birth trauma. And I wonder if you could just tell our listeners what happened to you.
Yes, of course. So I'd recently got married. I was expecting my first child. I'd read all the books and attended all the classes. Theo, I thought I was as well prepared as I could be. But what I actually hadn't been advised of was my own personal risk of perineal injury as a South Asian woman having her first child, which was much higher. So the risk to me was almost six times higher. I went into labour at a busy teaching hospital, and initially things were progressing as expected, but then there was a change of shift, and it was at that point the situation started to deteriorate. And unfortunately, despite repeatedly trying to discuss what was happening, we were just ignored, and this went on over several hours. I actually recall at one point being told to stop making a fuss. There was barely any communication, and we were obviously all really desperately worried by this point. Things continued to deteriorate until eventually it became a real obstetric emergency. Suddenly, there was a lot of panic in the room. There were several failed attempts at Vontus, and then an extremely traumatic forceps delivery that left my daughter Maya with facial injuries that became necrotic, and I sustained a 3C tear. 3C-tear is a tear in the perineum that extends into the internal and external anal sphincter muscle. It's also known as an OASI, an obstetric anal sphincter injury. Subsequently, I was taken for repair surgery, but, you know, I was in a very, very distressed state. I wasn't able to hold my daughter or feed her. And then after several hours, I was just left alone on the postnatal ward in the middle of the night. I couldn't really even pick my daughter up after the surgery. It was, you know, very traumatizing. And I experienced my first episode of bowel incontinence the very next day when I was in hospital, but I was just discharged without any follow-up at all.
Gosh, well, firstly, I'm so sorry to hear about your experience. And I hope you know you're not alone, Geeta. The whole point of this podcast is to, you know, create a community for mums and affected families. And I'm really struck by what you just said, that you were basically discharged from hospital and you didn't know what had happened to you. So could you just talk us through some of the kind of physical symptoms that you'd started to display, which made you realise that something was probably wrong?
So, yeah, as I alluded to, I mean, I had my first episode of bowel incontinence actually whilst I was still in hospital. But yeah, as soon as I was discharged and came home, I was experiencing severe physical symptoms straight away. So flatal urinary and bowel incontinence. I think the bowel incontinence was the worst. It was both passive incontinence and urgency. And I was obviously in a great deal of pain. And I was suffering also from what I now know was postnatal PTSD, which has very debilitating symptoms as well. And I think is often overlooked, you know, because the physical symptoms can be so extreme. And I think it's that unique combination of psychological and physical symptoms which can cause some maternal injuries to have such devastating consequences. You know, I went from being this resilient, independent woman to barely making it through the day. I needed a lot of support. I was having to wash several times a day in continual pain. It was accompanied by flashbacks of the delivery, these very intrusive thoughts going over and over what had happened. And if you haven't had any kind of, you know, psychological trauma before, you don't understand what's happening to you. You know, thoughts about why haven't I been listened to, and a lot of guilt that I should have been able to protect my daughter. It was very, very isolating.
I can imagine. And I totally relate to what you just said, Geeta. It's the shame as well that we all feel as mums that, you know, we didn't really talk about it to friends or families. So it makes me think about the point of today's episode is about going back to work. And if you can't even share it with the people you're closest to, how on earth do you raise it with an employer when you're thinking about going back from maternity leave? So you did go back to work eventually at Irwin Mitchell, but obviously you didn't go back after your initial maternity leave ended. So could you just talk a bit about that and what your kind of thoughts were at the time and how incredibly difficult that was for you not to return immediately to your career?
Yeah, I mean, I had become a completely different person, even to the point where during my maternity leave, my symptoms were so extreme that I had to go and live with my parents for support. And it was actually only at that point when I was seen in a perineal trauma unit and underwent full kind of endo-anal investigations, I was told just how severe my injuries were. So it involved pedental neuropathy as well. I then went and had a secondary repair procedure. And when that failed, I think I just gave up all hope for quite a long time. I was extremely career focused and I was very much expecting to pick up my career and carry on with my career progression. I was very passionate about the work I was doing, helping injured clients. And I worked with a lot of brilliant charities and healthcare providers. But my injuries, both physical and psychological, were so devastating that it was just impossible. And Theo, that in itself was another huge blow. It was a massive sense of loss and failure because it was such an intrinsic part of who I was. And again, that changes you as a person. It deeply affects your self-esteem, your self-confidence. You lose who you were, and the longer it goes on, the worse it gets. So this becomes your new reality. But in the background, I was also constantly berating myself. And as you say, there was a lot of guilt and shame linked to it. So it was a vicious cycle, really.
I think that's a really good place to bring in Shah. So Shah, what are the workplace rights for people who've suffered from birth trauma and maternal injuries? and whether it was physical or psychological. I'm interested to know what these sort of legal protections are and what they have, if you could just explain that a bit more to listeners.
I think you have to sort of, I suppose, reel things back to basic maternity rights to begin with, in particular in relation to maternity leave and pay. And the first thing to note is that all employees and workers are entitled up to 52 weeks of maternity leave, with statutory maternity pay for up to 39 weeks if you meet the qualifying conditions. So if you do need time off, the first thing to remember is that in any event, you have got maternity leave rights for a year, essentially, or before you need to return. So if an employer is trying to pressurize you to return before the end of those 52 weeks, they're not entitled to do that. If you then need further time off work due to injury, and as Geeta has mentioned, that the extent of the injuries that she suffered, the very brave of her to talk about her experience, but these are things that do happen when a mother suffers birth trauma injury, and it's very commonplace to suffer both physical impairments such as incontinence, issues with mobility, right through to psychological impairments, including PTSD. So if that is the situation where you do need additional time off work, you are entitled to take sick leave, and that's an absolute right for every employee in the UK. And the other thing to note is that that really is categorised as pregnancy-related sickness, and that should not count towards your sickness record in respect of any issues around your capability of doing the job or redundancy decisions, because ultimately that would amount to pregnancy-related discrimination, which is unlawful. Then in terms of returning to work, there are rights around being able to work flexibly. If you feel that you've been treated differently or detrimentally because of your injuries, then there are a number of protections, both under the Employment Rights Act and also the Equality Act. Under the Employment Rights Act, if you're dismissed for reasons related to injury, then there is the potential to claim unfair dismissal against your employer and to claim compensation. In addition to that, discrimination related to your pregnancy or childbirth injury is unlawful under the Equality Act. There are also rights around disability discrimination. So again, if you're subjected to what us equality lawyers call a detriment, so things like being treated differently to other employees that don't have the impairment that you do, or you are given a bad appraisal and so on and so forth, or there's a level of bullying and harassment, then you do have rights under the Equality Act to bring a claim. I would advise anyone facing that situation to seek legal advice, because you do have rights and protections under the Equality Act.
Well, that's incredibly useful advice. And I certainly wasn't aware of my rights before I had my first baby. I think it's really important that we, you know, better educate mothers to know what those rights are. And if we could just pick up on this point about what the specifics are for going back to work and this point about reasonable adjustments. Sure, could you just explain to listeners in a bit more detail, you know, if you're going back to work and you need to have something changed, what are the types of examples of adjustments that you could ask for in this scenario? So, for example, Geeta's just obviously talked about incontinence, and, you know, I was always wondering, you know, where's the nearest bathroom? That was the first thing I'd think about. So what specifically do employers have to think about, and what can we as mothers ask for in that scenario?
The right to request adjustments isn't what we call an absolute right. Any adjustments need to be reasonable, but more often than not, an employee, when they are requesting adjustments, they tend to be reasonable and workable because they've actually thought through how they can continue working with adjustments. I think specifically in relation to birth trauma injury, there are a number of things that you can look at, and the employee should make what we call a flexible working request and put it in writing. There's a process to do that. So to put it in writing, the employer then has to consider that and whether they feel it's reasonable or not. And if they don't feel it's reasonable, they need to come up with reasons as to why those adjustments aren't reasonable and to think about alternatives to what has been proposed. But the sorts of things that you can look at, there are first of all physical adjustments, so things like accessible toilet facilities. So if there's an issue with incontinence, being able to take regular breaks, accessible toilets. Then there's issues often around mobility as well with women that have suffered birth trauma injury. So things like installing ramps, lifts, adjusting heights of desks, ergonomic chairs, that sort of thing. The other area that one could look at, changes to work arrangements. So people often talk about flexible working hours. So things like allowing a flexible start and finish time, which is something that Geeta talked about, working part-time so that there might be periods where an employee, a mother, may have medical appointments. Also, working part-time could allow for issues like fatigue, which is very commonplace again. So all those sorts of things are a consideration, should be put in an application. And a really important flexible arrangement, which is very commonplace now, although I have noticed some employers are sort of regressing slightly, which is remote working where it works in the job, providing the option to work from home if an employee's condition makes it difficult to commute, makes it difficult to work in the workplace without access to things that are needed. And that's something I think that Geeta appreciated, certainly on her return to work, as I understand it, is that there was a level of flexibility shown in terms of remote working. The other thing is potentially equipment to allow for issues around mobility or ability to use certain equipment, certain IT equipment in the office, for example. So things like screen readers or adaptive keyboards, ergonomic tools, particularly where there's some form of mobility issue with using your hands, for example. And then finally, an adjustment to your duties, which sounds like a really big step, but actually can work in many, many cases. So often you hear about job redesign in these situations, so modifying someone's job role to remove tasks that they might find difficult due to what are characterized under the Equality Law, Equality Act, as disabilities, in particular issues around mental health, PTSD. Those types of situations may mean that an employee needs to be taken out of a particularly stressful situation. So, for example, for a lawyer like Geeta, she would have had to have dealt with clients perhaps who also had issues around injury and that sort of thing. And perhaps that may have been a sort of trigger for her own mental health. So, again, removing from that role to work with charities and other partners of the business was a good idea, and it also worked because I suppose then you have someone who's got the energy and will to come back to work and has persevered and gone through so much and has come back fighting. So the other thing is also, even if someone stays in the same role, you can look at the reallocation of certain duties to alleviate the level of stress, or there might be certain tasks that employee can't do, particularly in more physical jobs, for example. So you can redistribute with it to other team members. So that's something that should be considered. And finally, of course, training and support. A good mentor means everything. So, so important. And actually, that would count as a reasonable adjustment to have a mentor to check in on you, see how things are working, all of those things. And the other thing is training. There might be issues around additional training that might be required to help the employee perform the job effectively.
Well, that's really helpful to have some specific examples. And I think for mothers to know, you know, what their rights are and what they can ask.
Imagine being told your son would never be able to walk or talk. When we didn't know where to turn, Erwin Mitchell were there.
Our legal and financial experts understand the impact of a serious injury. We help our clients receive the best possible medical care, rehabilitation, and compensation.
My son is now 12. He can walk, he can talk, and he makes me so happy.
At Erwin Mitchell, we'll help you to imagine what's possible so nothing feels impossible. Authorised and regulated by the Solicitors Regulation Authority.
Geeta, if I could just go back to you for a moment. So you obviously didn't go back to work straight away. Do you remember the moment when you decided you did feel you were ready to go back? And what were you worried about on your return to the workplace?
Well, I mean, I didn't. So the point is that I think because of that cycle of taboo and shame, the severity of my incontinence and other symptoms, I'd really just shut myself off, as so many women who experience this do. As I say, it's a very isolating experience. I was in that position for many, many years. And as I say, I thought that whole area was just shut off to me. A conversation just developed from there quite unexpectedly. And, you know, I do feel very, very lucky, because I really thought I'd lost my career forever. And alongside that, lost my identity. And it's only really due to the huge amount of support that I've had from my firm, Erwin Mitchell. Not only their policies, such as flexible working that Shah's talked about, reduced hours, time off for medical appointments, but it also extends to the whole culture and ethos of the firm, and the kind of genuine support and understanding from my colleagues, especially some really trailblazing female mentors that I have, which I think has really helped. In particular, Alison Eddy and Anne Kavanagh, amongst others, who I work closely with. I am in a very different role now, and I work with a lot of charitable partners, for example, the Birth Trauma Association and the MASIC Foundation, and policymakers. I gave evidence at the Parliamentary Inquiry into Birth Trauma that you chaired, of course, Theo, and it's all really to support women with maternal injuries and, importantly, to try to prevent this from happening to other women.
Well, I think it's so important that we talk about this, because I do think this is the kind of stigma in society today, is that when women have, you know, something they're ashamed about or something gone wrong, we don't tend to talk about it enough. And I think what we're saying today is that, you know, we have both gone back to work. We did both suffer from birth injuries, but, you know, we have been on the road to recovery, and we've absolutely gone back to doing what we love doing, and they can too. So have you got any specific advice, both of you, for mums who are, you know, worried either they can't go back after their maternity leave has ended and they don't know how to raise it with their employers? So, Geeta, what advice would you have for any other women listening today who've been affected by birth trauma?
I mean, I've got general advice I'd give is really the most important thing is to know that you are not alone. Sustaining injuries after a traumatic delivery, you know, as I've said before, it's very isolating. There's this recognised taboo and stigma around things, particularly like incontinence, which is why this podcast is just so very important. There, 16 years ago when I sustained my injuries, no one was talking about birth trauma. So I would say reach out. There are amazing support organisations, you know, that can help. Also, knowing what treatment pathways should be available to you is really helpful so that you can advocate for yourself. And there has been real progress in terms of those pathways, such as the Perinatal Pelvic Health Service. But again, when you are ready, or if you're ready to reach out to your employer, try to have those open discussions, which I know can be really very hard. But hopefully, you know, hearing some of the information Shah has shared with you today, knowing your rights can hopefully empower those conversations.
A lot of mums who write into me say they feel quite embarrassed or, you know, very hesitant about asking. But I think if they know what their rights are, then hopefully that will give them the encouragement that they need to do so. So, Shah, just specifically on discussions with employers, You know, at what point do they need to, for example, seek legal advice? And what does that entail? What should they do in that scenario if their employer is not being as accommodating as they'd like?
First point of call is always to speak to HR. And most HR professionals are trained and alive to many of the issues that we've talked about, although they're often directed by other managers within the business and they have to take those views into account. So first of all, speak to HR, see what can be done. If you're still facing issues, then seek legal advice as soon as possible. There are various organisations that you can also make contact with in the first instance, although I'd always say speak to a lawyer before you take steps, because they can assist you with preparing a letter setting out your rights before you even need to go down any sort of legal route whatsoever. But there are organisations, one is ACAS, the Conciliation Service, and another organisation that really works with mothers is Maternity Action. And both of those organisations can certainly give basic guidance, although in many circumstances where there are specific issues, you should speak to a lawyer. As I'm talking, I'm just thinking about a particular case that came up in 2021, the case of Mrs. R, who suffered a birth trauma injury. And as a result of that, she suffered post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. In that situation, actually, she faced significant mental health issues, which affected her ability to work, also suffered from depression and anxiety, which is, you know, very common for women that have suffered this level of injury. And in that case, actually, and this is really, I suppose, to give the listeners some comfort, is that she actually did decide to bring a claim because her employer failed to make reasonable adjustments to accommodate the condition. And that included not allowing her to work flexible hours and not providing the additional support that she needed to help manage the workload. And she took the case under the Equality Act, and she argued that her employer failed to make reasonable adjustments and it also treated her unfavorably, and that constituted discrimination arising out of a disability. And the tribunal ruled in her favor and awarded her significant compensation for both distress and the financial loss that she suffered. I think cases like that, what they do, they underscore the legal protections that are available to employees. They are out there. And the most important thing is to seek legal advice if you get to that situation. And most lawyers, what they will do is they will refer to that case in other cases as a case in point, because it's also very costly and also very distressing for employers to deal with legal action. So it's so much better to talk and to come up with a solution and adjustments. And it's almost always in the employer's best interest as well.
That's incredibly helpful. One of the things I always like to, you know, ask guests on the show is to some really practical advice and to signpost mothers to support that they need. So Geeta, you've done a huge amount of work to advocate for, you know, maternity safety and groups like the MASIC Foundation. But some mums might not even be aware of charities like that or the support that they offer. So what practical advice would you signpost a mother to who's, you know, been through a similar experience to yourself, which you think would really help them with healing and their own recovery?
Yeah, it would be to reach out to the birth trauma charities and support groups that are out there, the Birth Trauma Association, Make Birth Better and MASIC. They have so much valuable information on their websites as other mum stories, downloadable guides. They also have fantastic signposting. They have advice on what treatment to get, how to access that, whether that's a perineal trauma clinic, which hopefully you've been referred to, but also about how to access maternal mental health services, and particularly those trauma-informed therapies, which can be so invaluable and which are often left behind when you're focusing on your physical injuries. But the one thing they provide that's really invaluable is peer support, Theo. It's one of the things I found most valuable, to know you're not alone in all of this. And often it's actually the other peer supporters that have a wealth of information, you know, they're experts on their condition. And it also offers a really safe space just to talk.
I think that's such an important point. And you know, you and I, Geeta, both suffered from birth trauma and it's affected us for years, but we have got, you know, much better. And whether it was on the physical or the mental health side, I think it's really important for families to know that there is help out there. So I'll make sure that in the show notes, we have some hyperlinks for kind of useful organisations like MASIC, BTA, to signpost mothers to that. And Geeta, you mentioned that you gave evidence to the birth trauma inquiry. And one of the questions I always like to ask my guests is, you know, imagine the Prime Minister or the Health Secretary was listening. Do you have a particular policy ask that you would like the government to implement on maternity care?
I do, Theo, yeah. It would be to fund and roll out standardised NHS-provided antenatal classes and classes that are accessible to every woman, including, for example, those who have language barriers. It's so important for women to be able to empower themselves with the knowledge to be able to advocate during their delivery. I think there's a lot of emphasis on what to do after the baby arrives. And there's also, unfortunately, a lot of misinformation at present on social media. So that reintroduction of comprehensive NHS antenatal classes would really help to tackle that. And it would help to ensure informed decision making. You know, pregnant women do not need to be shielded from information. The more information women can have can make a really positive effect, and it can really, but can also help to reduce levels of trauma.
I think that's so important. And I'm very much keeping up my, you know, national campaign to improve maternity care. I've been speaking in Parliament in the last few months to kind of make the case to new MPs of why it's so important that the birth trauma inquiry recommendations are being implemented. Well, I hope that's some really practical advice for families listening about where they can get help. And Shah, if I could ask you the same two questions. So firstly, could you give mums listening a really practical piece of advice to signpost them to? I was particularly struck by your comments on the kind of legal side. There's a few websites that you mentioned. So what in particular would you like to direct them to?
In terms of legal advice and support, if you get to a point where you feel that your employer is not listening, there are a couple of organisations that I mentioned. The first one, Maternity Action, their website is maternityaction.org.uk. I think that's right. So hopefully, Theo, you'll be able to put that on the podcast. And the other one is acas.org.uk. Both of those organisations, their staff are very helpful. And if they can't help, they will signpost you to someone that can. And ultimately, if it really gets to a point where you have got no choice, then speak to a lawyer. They will give you guidance and they can, at the very least, write a letter on your behalf, particularly in relation to the right to seek reasonable adjustments in the workplace. Question number two is a more difficult one for me. I suppose... In terms of birth trauma injury, it's the same as you in a way, Theo, which is to implement the recommendations of the birth trauma inquiry. In terms of my own expertise in equality law, the thing that I would say is important is at the moment to bring a claim for discrimination, as in discriminatory acts, an employee has to bring that within 3 months of the last discriminatory act. That's too short, in my view. 3 months is not enough. And what happens if that individual is unwell, suffering from mental health issues? They may not be able to bring a claim within 3 months. They just can't deal with it. And there is a mechanism where you can, on a just and equitable basis, apply for that time limit to be extended. But it'd be much better, and I know the government is proposing this, is actually to extend the time limit. They're proposing to extend it to 6 months, which I am in support of. Personally, with discrimination cases, I still feel it is too short, particularly where you have civil claims, where you've got 3 years or 6 years to bring a claim. And in terms of medical negligence, for example, you've got a three-year time limit. So the employment discrimination time limitation, in my view, is too short and should be extended.
Well, lots of food for thought, I think, from both of you today. And this is such an important subject. I think we're going to have to return to it more than once on this show, because mothers need to get access to the support and the care that they need. And I hope that by today's podcast, where we've talked a bit about going back to work, knowing that it's okay to ask for help, it's okay to talk to your employers, you know, they're there to help you. In fact, as Shah's told us, they have a legal obligation to do so. And I'd just like to finally touch on, Geeta, we've talked less about the kind of medical negligence side, but one of my recommendations in the birth trauma inquiry was to give mothers and families slightly longer time to decide if they needed to get further information from the hospital about their cases. But could you just talk about those, I think it's fair to say, still quite rare examples where someone's had to get follow-up from the hospital? But in that scenario, what advice would you provide?
As you say, you know, the vast majority of women have a positive maternity experience with extremely dedicated healthcare professionals. But sometimes, unfortunately, you may have questions about the care you've received, or you're concerned about something went wrong. And in those circumstances, there are various options. Theo, you can obtain a copy of your medical notes and records. You can speak to the patient advice and liaison service, the PALs at the hospital you delivered, for advice and informal resolution. Or you may want to go on to submit a verbal or written complaint, and you'll receive a written response. And, you know, if you do feel like you need to seek legal advice, I would just say, Thea, the most important thing is that you speak to a specialist solicitor and to make sure you feel fully supported. I'll include some information in the podcast show notes around all of this and other important issues such as time limits.
Thank you for having me on, first of all, Theo. It's been interesting and eye-opening to listen to Geeta's story, and it was very brave of her to come on here and talk about it. And I feel as an equality lawyer, it's so important that people do break that taboo and talk about their experiences, because only through doing that are we going to be able to have a groundswell of being able to put pressure on the government to make changes, to make life easier for women that have suffered birth trauma injury, and wider than that, working mothers generally. It's a really important issue, and thank you very much for inviting me on today.
Well, can I thank you both so much for coming on today's show? I think it was really important to have this discussion, and I don't think we talk about this issue enough. So can I thank both of my guests for coming on Breaking the Taboo? And if you've been enjoying the show and the last few episodes, then please can you rate us on wherever you get your podcasts, and do write in to us. You can tweet at me or on social media using the hashtag Breaking the Taboo. We're very keen to hear from you, to hear your stories and your feedback. Also send in suggestions for future episodes, because this topic came about today because of listener feedback. And I'm really keen to ensure the show is covering what families want to know about. So do dial into us next week. And thanks for joining us today on Breaking the Taboo.